You're with Rick Munn on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And hello, welcome back. It's midday, the 13th of July. It's quite sunny. I hope it's sunny where you are. And today we are going to be talking to Steve Ferry in approximately 6 minutes. And we're going to be talking about the agenda. We're going to be talking about the perpetrators. Who are the bad guys that are pushing the narrative, the storylines upon humanity? We've already talked to Francis, where we looked at some of the evidence. Now we're going to look at the bad guys who are responsible. So some quick news stories. Steve is all the way from the once great USA. So I've picked out some Trump stories and something I found on the website of World Economic Forum. And a new survey published by the New York Times says that former President Donald Trump has the backing of 49% of Republican voters, followed by Florida government Ron DeSantis with 25%. The interesting point about this story, it says the headline was, more than half of Republican voters won't vote for Trump, rather than more than 49% will, which in any sort of voting ballot poll is incredibly good numbers. And this poll comes out at the same time as it's been released rather quietly in the mainstream media that the Democrats and the Hillary Clinton campaign, who are ultimately responsible for pushing the Russiagate narrative, also try to promote far right, very far right, white supremacist type politicians within the Republican Party, and including the encouragement of the candidate Donald Trump in order to polarize the party, to push voters in that direction, whilst at the same time discrediting Bernie Sanders. They gave them TV time, or in case Bernie Sanders, no TV time, so that they could hopefully have a Democratic winner in the case of Hillary Clinton in the 2016 election. So the tactics that are employed politically in order to get your candidate to win, including financing your opposition in the hope that it will drag away some of the voters that you don't want while splitting the vote and trying to improve the numbers voting for you, is insane. So what else have we got? World Economic Forum. I am going to guess, and I'm going to ask Steve to nod at me, the World Economic Forum may become a topic of our conversation in the next 50 minutes. And I thought, I'll go and check to see what the World Economic Forum are tweeting about. Quite interesting. So I looked at a video. It was published, I think, a day or so ago. And it was talking about the economic crisis in Turkey. Turkey being a European country that has probably some of the highest inflation, particularly in the Western world. Currently, inflation in Turkey is at a whopping 73%. And it was looking at the advice that the World Economic Forum was suggesting, or the Turkish people were employing in order to combat this massive inflation. So what are the Turkish doing? And, you know, if it's being promoted by the World Economic Forum, don't do what they say. It's probably not in your best interest. But the Turks are buying secondhand cars in order to preserve capital as money loses value fast in banks. In fact, one guy, a Turkish guy, he says, yeah, I've just bought a car for X amount. He says, I'm going to probably sell it in a couple of hours. And in that time, that secondhand car will have increased in value by 20%, which is mental, isn't it? That's mental. How true it is, it's from the World Economic Forum, but this is what they're saying. Also in Turkey, we're talking about Turkey, a bit different, interest rates are at 14%. So what the Turkish doing, they're taking out long-term loans and then spending that on food and items they need now, hoping that because of massive inflation, when they finally come back to paying that loan, the money that they originally took out is very easy to pay because inflation has devalued the currency and interest rates are way, way below inflation. So that's what the Turks are doing to combat inflation. And in the same breath, here's a little number for you to think about. Global debt reached a record $303 trillion during 1 year. So from 2020 to 2021, the increase in global debt, that's all debt, increased by nearly $100 trillion. So we're talking in excess of a 30%, 40% increase in global debts, credit cards, loans, governments, you name it, all debt put together in a nice little bundle. So this is why we are now seeing the economic crisis that has befallen us. Anyway, do you have any suggestions for a possible guest or a host that you would like to hear on TNT Radio? Or perhaps you have a topic you feel we should discuss? Then we want to hear from you. Simply complete the suggestion form on the TNT Radio website. Help us make a difference on TNT Radio.
Digging deeper into the news.
It's the topics that matter to me.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And we're back. That was very quick. And I am here with Stephen Ferry. He is dialing in on Zoom all the way from the once great USA. How are you, Steve? And what time is it over there?
I'm very well, thank you, Darren. And right now it's just past 6 in the morning.
Okay, and you're wide awake. You're not in your pajamas like you promised. So I'm a little bit disappointed. Not that I wanted to see you in your pajamas.
These are my PJs.
Oh, right. You Stephen, in a t-shirt. So, hi, Stephen, and it's great to have you on. We've had a little bit of discussion, and we're going to sort of focus on not so much the evidence of what's been befallen us, i.e. there's a conspiracy or a plan, but those that are perpetuating it, the perpetrators, who are the criminals? Are we talking individuals? Are we talking the World Economic Forum? But briefly, before we start on that conversation, could you just tell the viewers, the listeners, who you are, please?
Well, I don't know that who I am is that important, but I do have a wide range of skill sets that I've acquired over, you know, almost 7 decades of being alive. If there's one overriding characteristic I think that I would like to convey is that I'm an iconoclast. I think of myself as being blessed with sufficient opportunities, inquisitiveness to seek, find, and promulgate workable truths on various subjects. So I have various skill sets. They don't really define who I am. I think, go on.
No. I wasn't interrupting you. Carry on.
Sure.
Your website, you have a website, defendinghumanity.global, which it looks at human rights. There's webinars on there. There's a whole range of sites that you can click, lots of information that you can look at. So what's the purpose of this website? Because I said, oh, look, it's all about human rights. And you said, no, it's about waking people up. So what do you mean? What's the purpose of your website? And how successful has it been in not just disseminating the information that's on there, but waking people up? A term that I've sort of become quite adverse to. I don't like it anymore. You know, are you awake? So your website.
Well, the apparency is that rather too many people were not awake. But thank goodness there have been so many freedom fighters active around the world that more and more are waking up, whatever, however we define it. We actually have 2 websites, and Defending Humanity was one that we put together because we realized that the problem is that human rights only exist because they're not respected by some people. You and I don't need human rights if it was just us two alive on the planet, because we would respect each other's rights. The people who don't respect your rights are the exact people who are creating all the problems. There's at least 300 civilizations that have come and gone in Earth's immediate short history. And the simple reason for this is this spectacularly poor record is that we have got psychotic elitists who are bent upon pushing everyone else down in the misbelief that everyone else presents a threat to them and the position of privilege they have secured for themselves. And our civilization is no different. So I've actually got quite a lot of familiarity with the elitists because I've been in their dens, in their lairs. And I've seen firsthand just how evil some of them can be. A lot of, perhaps I should differentiate between elite and elitists. Because the elite, you hear a lot of people talking about the elite, but it's actually a misnomer. The elite actually exists as a natural order of things in society, where you get a different level of ability, which allows a person to rise up. And the difference is an elite person is very able, and he uses his abilities to help others as well. An elitist, on the other hand, is a bit of an evil SOB. And his viewpoint or his mindset is that people are useless. You know, we've heard people like Yuval Harari, yeah. the weasel advisor to Klaus Schwab, talking about what he thinks about the normal person. And this is a theme that, and I think we'll probably be discussing this today, but this is a theme that keeps popping up with these elitists. And so an elitist is the bad guy, and we don't have enough elite, really, because an able person helping other people is something we need more of. There's nothing bad about it. So I hope I've...
The difference between, you know, we termed it elites and as a sort of euphemism for the bad guys, we all sort of understand what the elites are. I've been using the term specifically today because we have had this a theme running through the conversations. We've been talking about politics. We've been talking about the agenda and the narrative. So I've been calling them the parasites or the parasitic class, because that is what they are doing. You're right. We are ruled over by psychopaths. There is a sort of Pareto split across our society where there is an element of psychopathic people. The number that I've been quoting is 50%. And I was actually quite pointedly corrected, saying, nah, it's greater than 15%. But whatever that percentage of our population that are genuine psychopaths, they're not elite people, as you just described, as skilled, knowledgeable, decent, better humans. These people have no skill, they have no knowledge, they have no understanding of humanity, and yet they sit over us because they are able or willing to do whatever it takes to put them in that position so that they can leech off the public and suck up all that is good, including our hard work, including our wealth. So you mentioned Klaus Schwab. You've mentioned Noah Urali. Who else then do you consider to fit into this sort of parasitic class? And are there bloodlines that have always sort of arched over humanity looking down?
Absolutely there are. It was sort of a family affair, essentially, with the Rothschilds. They started the ball rolling most recently, or in recent history, 2 centuries ago, by extending their bank from one country to multiple countries so that they could then play one country off against the other. Where it actually started to take off was with Cecil Rhodes of De Beers fame. And funnily enough, he teamed up with the Rothschilds and also the British royal family, or a representative of the British royal family. And that was like 130, 131 years ago. And he gave his purpose in a manifesto, Rhodes did, Cecil Rhodes, in 1877. And if we have time, I can quote.
Yeah, if you can quickly get the quote out before the ad break that's coming up in a couple of minutes. I have seen the quote already, so please go.
Okay. I contend that we, meaning Anglo-Saxons, are the finest race in the world, and that the more of the world we inhabit, the better it is for the human race. Just fancy those parts that are at present inhabited by the most despicable specimens of human beings. I mean, this is pretty wild stuff. Why should we not form a secret society with but one object? The furtherance of the British Empire and the bringing of the whole uncivilized world under British rule for the recovery of the United States to make the Anglo-Saxon race but one empire. An Anglo-American elite who would exercise their control by covertly collaborating with and manipulating the world's political, economic, scientific, and cultural leaders. In order to exert their covert power, the group has to be a secret organization. Oof.
Yeah, and so, we will pick up on that statement straight after this ad break on TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's Misty Winston.
Both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party engage in various forms of corruption to maintain the power and control for the oligarchy. Polls have shown that more than 60% of Americans want a third party option in the United States, and the oligarchy is doing everything in its power to ensure that we do not have that option. Today, we are talking with Green Party candidate for Senate in North Carolina, Matthew Ho.
Look, the people on the State Board of Elections, the board members, the three Democrats, two Republicans, you know, they might have a love for democracy. They may be election law experts, whatever, but they are there first and foremost out of loyalty to their parties. That when a situation occurs like last Thursday, where a Green Party, a party that's going to represent workers, the climate, that's going to push for things like single payer health care and affordable housing, has the potential to be on the ballot, those people are put on a State Board of Elections because it's known that they will do the right thing for their parties and not, you know, follow the law, do what's right.
Misty Winston on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
I think people should come to Freedom Fest for the friendship, getting to know folks, getting to talk with people that have similar views, but also can kind of challenge you a little bit.
One of the best things about Freedom Fest is coming here and learning that you are not alone in your fight for freedom.
There's people from all walks of life, from all across the United States and even the world come here.
Don't miss Freedom Fest,
the largest liberty event of the year.
July 13th to 16th at the Mirage in Las Vegas. For more information, go to freedomfest.com.
This is where you get your daily ration of high-velocity conversation.
Today's News Talk Radio,
TNT.
And we're back. It's Darren of Plymouth standing in for Rick Munn. I am here until 1 p.m. And we are talking with Steve Ferry, all the way from the once great USA. And I hope you don't mind me saying that. I'm only saying that because you've got Biden and the Democrats in charge. And we're talking about, we were talking about Cecil Rhodes, the Rothschilds, Klaus Schwab, and people who are parasitic and elitist, but not elite. And Steve, he just read out a statement from Cecil Rhodes. And I've just done a quick Google on Cecil Rhodes. Some of us in the UK will know who he is because during the BLM riots of 2020, his statue at Oxford University was one of the statues that was come under attack. It wanted to be pulled down by the leftist mob because Cecil Rhodes was a colonialist. He was obviously a slaver and a racist and a really, really bad guy. He was also a mining magnate. And he was prime minister of the Cape Colony from 1880 to 1896. So you've just read out a statement about, and it's quite an elitist statement. It's about the continuation of the British Empire, ensuring that everything service the British Empire, and that the Anglo-Saxon man who was the best, according to Cecil Rhodes, should be the one that benefits off the lesser beings of the planet. Is that a sort of, in a Darren of Plymouth way, best way of describing that statement?
I think it's fairly succinct, yes. Cecil Rhodes kicked it off, and it's interesting that the whole concept of eugenics arose just before that or around the same time. Basic same idea. And the funny thing is that most of this was not known to most people, but the mindset that we see amongst the elitists needs to be known and widely understood. And fortunately, the arrogant blatherings of Klaus Schwab and that weasel I mentioned, Yuval Harari, They've been revealing to more and more shocked citizens around the world the details of their plans and the intentions behind them. Up to that point, it was only people who, like myself, in about early 70s, I read None Dare Call It Conspiracy. That opened my eyes to what was going on, but most people have not been aware. And since then, WEF, World Economic Forum, those psychotics are pretty late in the game. It was actually Henry Kissinger who set them up. And but there have been multiple organizations, such as the Council on Foreign Relations, the Bilderbergers, the Club of Rome. They've been carrying the torch. Oh, sorry?
Trilateral Commission.
Yes, exactly. I mean, it's amazing how many of these groups they started. But they've been carrying the torch for the elitist cause for years. And it's only with WEF that they started to become quite so indiscreet. Well, thank goodness, because it is waking people up, quote unquote.
I mean, the World Economic Forum, I had never, I'd heard of them prior to 2020. I was aware of them, but I only saw it as just a think tank of rich people and politicians, and that their real world influence was actually kept to quite a small sphere of these parasitic, of the parasitic class, where they all just talked to each other and wrote crappy books full of business jargon and lingo and words that were just thrust together in sentences that don't really mean anything other than those people that were involved in that environment. But as we have seen in the last 2.5 years, their tentacles and their influence is very, very far reaching. So what do you think about the World Economic Forum? And actually, who is the motivating driver behind them? Who's the brains and who's the finance and who set it up? You've already mentioned one of the demons of the world, Kissinger, who's actually sort of seems to be pulling back on his own image. So, yeah, who's the driver behind this, the World Economic Forum?
Well, I think it's the group as a whole. I mean, Klaus Schwab is actually one of the the Rothschild family. So he does seem to be quite central. I haven't investigated them myself to speak with great authority as to who actually is driving them. But they're certainly driving everybody else. And I was actually quite surprised over the last 2 years, as you said, I thought WEF prior to that was just some think tank, but they're not. They're actually they've had their hand in the cookie jar, and they've been very active setting up, basically setting up the whole world to do what they say. But I notice also that a lot of these people that they put in place are starting to fall apart. Macron's about to exit, isn't he? Boris Johnson already did a little bit of a a bow out. it's interesting to see.
I don't know if they're all fleeing ship at the moment because of the adverse events or the fact that they look so ridiculous and incompetent and they're all sort of scurrying away. I don't know if that's happening or if we are witnessing a palace coup that's been organized by the World Economic Forum. And apparently, if we go on my last conversation with the wonderful June Slater, Tony Blair and hit a Tony Blair Institute. The man's, that warmonger and war criminal with the blood of millions on his hands. He's got his own institute. It's great how that happens. So what do you feel about the Rothschilds? You've mentioned Klaus Schwab is a Rothschild. Can you tell me any more about Klaus Schwab and in particular his interactions with Henry Kissinger?
Well, Henry Kissinger has from the very beginning been the person who put Schwab and the WEF there. So I'm sure that relationship continues. I don't know how the hell Kissinger continues. He must be about 150 by now.
It's been around forever.
I think it's an awful lot of adrenochrome he's drinking or something. maybe I shouldn't go down that road. It's really a ghastly subject. I would like to focus a bit. I'd like to tell you a personal story.
Okay.
Because the...
Go to a break in 1 minute.
Okay. Well, you just cut me off when it's time.
Yeah. So, Yeah, sorry. What we'll do is we'll come back after the news headlines in a minute, and we'll discuss the personal story that you wanted to tell, and we will see if we can have a look more at the influence of the World Economic Forum on world affairs and what the plans they may have and how they're going to continue to dictate the affairs of sovereign nations all over the planet. So we'll be right back after these news headlines.
With a check of the day's headlines, I'm Darren Metzer. The United States has triggered China after sending one of its warships through the northern South China Sea. Chilling CCTV footage from inside the Texas primary school, where 19 children and two teachers were shot dead in May, has been shown to the public. And a nationwide state of emergency has now been declared in Sri Lanka, after the nation's president fled the country on a military jet to the Maldives instead of resigning.
Do you have an upcoming community event, rally, march, festival, or fundraiser that could do with some free publicity? TNT Radio wants to promote it for you. Simply visit the What's On Events calendar on the TNT Radio website and submit your event details, and we'll get the word out, helping you make a difference on TNT Radio.
Welcome back. It's Darren of Plymouth standing in for Rick Munn on Locked and Loaded, TNT Radio. I'm here for the remaining half an hour of this stint, and I'm talking to Steve Ferry about the parasitic class, the World Economic Forum, Henry Kissinger's had a mention. And Steve, you're about to tell me a personal story from your own experience, I take it. So before I rudely cut you off, and I didn't mean to do that, but please carry on.
Sure, thanks. Rhodes expressed the viewpoint that the British or the English culture was superior. I'm not going to say it's superior, but I absolutely love it. I was born and raised in England, and I'm sympathetic to his point of view on that regard. But it doesn't mean that I then regard that like he does or did, and everyone else is like him, that everyone else is inferior. But there is a fairly deep mindset within England that personally it took me at least two decades to get through, to get out of my space. And the mindset is that we are superior. I went to, my alma mater was Haileybury, Haileybury and Imperial Services College. That was the public school where the administrators of the British Empire were trained to run it. And the mindset was fundamentally that I, as a Brit, was innately superior. And I mean, my arrogance was unassailable. When I visited foreign lands, I quietly regarded the locals as being foreigners. And of course, they didn't know they were inferior by virtue of that fact alone, but they were. and the irony is, I held this viewpoint despite being the token black boy at a school of 550 students. My nickname was Sam, and that was short for Sambo. In the 60s, Sambo was, I guess, the token black guy. Anyway, the reason for that is my mother wasn't English and my skin color was like coffee latte as opposed to pure milky white skins of the other 549 boys. yeah, right. I mentioned this experience not because I'm saying that the British are psycho-elitists, but just to show how deeply delusional, beguiling, and even self-congratulatory the elitist mindset can be, and especially when it's been adopted by psychos who are in power. And I mentioned that I had been in the lair and the den of the elitists, and that's because one of my professions was training butlers and staff of elitists. And so I got a very up-close look, firsthand or also an awful lot of secondhand from my students, of exactly how awful these people can be. I actually wrote an article that proved quite popular called The Poor People's Skills of the Wealthy. And I sought to give elitists pointers on how to attract and keep good staff. It was Emily Post who said, perhaps a servant problem is more often an employer problem, because one of the complaints that elitists have is you can never find good staff. Well, I think Emily Post was right, certainly in terms of elitists. So, I want to take it back, though, to actually Plato, because Plato, in his Republic, which he wrote 2,400 years ago, he said the following, and I'm going to quote, "The good must be paired with the good and the bad with the bad. and the offspring of the one must be reared and of the other destroyed. In this way, the flock will be preserved in prime condition. Now, that surprised the heck out of me. Because, you know, Plato, Platonic, you thought he had a better viewpoint of other people. But with all due respect to Plato, his eugenic-centric plan for managing society really betrays what I think is a frustration with understanding what makes people tick, how to help them, and thus how to make society perform better. It's not surprising, actually, if you look at it from a logic standpoint, because Plato taught Aristoteles, and he and Aristoteles introduced three-valued logic into our collective thinking process. Yes, no, or maybe. But Plato was stuck in his thinking process with two-valued logic, yes or no, good or bad, which leaves little room for fine-tuning conclusions mm-hmm. and plans of action. Mm-hmm. So Plato's notion, which has been carried forward today in the fakery of eugenics and other things, is that people are either superior or inferior, and there's nothing that can be done to improve or change the situation. Today's infinity-valued logic comes much closer to what it takes to derive correct conclusions and solutions, and that's why that's what I think of these elitists as being complete raving lunatics, because they're still using two-valued logic. And that's one of the reasons why they give us conclusions and programs that have more holes in them than a hobo's socks and more insanities than a raving lunatic.
And that's because, like you said, the elitists, what keep calling them the parasitic class, they actually have no real understanding because they're in such a small percentile. And as Rishi Sunak, Rishi Sunak is the ex-chancellor, if you're aware, ex-chancellor of the UK. He's running for the prime minister's job. And there's a video out of him, and he's there like a chinless wonder, with the floppy hair, the centre part in floppy hair. And he's going, I've got friends who are aristocrats. I've got friends who are uber wealthy. I've got friends who are working class. And then he goes, no, I actually haven't got any working class friends. And it's because they are so separated from us and deliberately keep that separation from us that they actually have no understanding of humanity. They think, as my advice has been throughout this show, they are always right and that they cannot be wrong, that they are infallible. And that if they make a decision and then implement it, like you said, in a binary way, then there's never any comeback. What do you mean we're wrong? We're never wrong. Just go with the decision. Do you think that that's the sort of one of the major issues is that there is a separation between humanity? You have humanity and then a parasitic class who does not understand humanity at all.
Absolutely. I mean, when you know these people quite closely, you know that they actually have to keep pumping themselves up as being superior, even in most mm-hmm. cases, they have no, there's nothing superior about them at all, mm-hmm. Except how it's only the angle of their nose that tells them they're superior. I mean, who was it? When I train butlers, I tell stories about the things that go on. And I don't want to slag off the British royal family because there's some loyalty. Yeah, thanks. But anyway, the reason that the British royal family used to, and may still, I don't know, I don't have a line in there anymore, use two forks in order to eat their fish is because the Queen one day was visiting one of her subjects in London, one of these PR stunts, and happened to notice they were Roman Catholic and the table was laid for a fish dinner, it being Friday, that they had the same style of fork and knife as she was using in Buckingham Palace. So the immediate orders to her butler were that they were not to eat fish with a fish and knife fork again anymore. So then the butler comes up with, well, let's try two forks. So I don't know if that's a tall tale or not, but you'll see that in a movie.
Gosford Park. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, in Gosford Park, mention is made of that. So it just shows you that they, you know, go on.
There's a similar story in, you know, if you go back to the sort of the 1700s and the 1600s where they all wore white wigs. Yep. And actually the reason for that was because royalty used to wear white wigs. And the only reason that they wore white wigs was because they were bald or they had serious lice problems. So they used to remove their hair. And the reason they were all powdered and white was because they were covering themselves with probably highly toxic chemicals back then or materials in order to clean themselves and make themselves smell better because they were, you know, stinking and they were covered with parasites. And so everybody wore a white wig for no other reason than the royalty were doing that, the aristocracy was doing that. And so it became a symbol of fashion. And I have absolutely no doubt that, you know, the two fork story that you've just told as a method of eating fish, or royalty eating fish, is perfectly true. Oh, the queen does it. The queen can't be wrong or never admits to being wrong. And therefore, this must be the correct way to eat fish. And I think that that's an attitude that the uber wealthy, those that rule over us, have, that they can't be wrong, and that they must, that the public think like they do, and that the public must behave and respond in the way that they do. I think that was the emphasis of your story.
Exactly, but there in the fork story, there is hope for mankind because it didn't go beyond the British upper class. The middle class said, "The hell with this." And they keep using the fish and knife and fork for fish. Anyway.
It's actually a really good metaphor for where we are now, Stephen, because it is actually, in my experience, I'm somebody who's always lived quite, what I like to call, quite at street level. And I don't mean I'm living on the streets, but, you know, I'm not uber wealthy or anything like that. I'm a working class person. I'm a teacher. And sometime radio host. And it's these people that the diktats of the elitists have not been able to reach because we're like, we don't agree with you. And this isn't reality. We don't eat fish like that, or we don't wear wigs like you do. Do you think this is where the biggest strength of humanity comes from and the most of the resistance is at the lowest levels of society?
In a way, but you still got freedom fighters, and I think they're key. They're the people who are intelligent, understand the world of the elitist, and start putting up the reasoning and the arguments that's needed to, for everybody else to understand. And then you get the people who, then you get the people who can think for themselves, basically, which is what a freedom fighter is, and that mm-hmm. there's no social class that they belong to. And so it's really the freedom fighters, the people who think for themselves, that are the hope, and who are leading the charge in terms of waking up, quote unquote. Sorry if I keep using that, but
that's fine.
Waking up.
Everyone else.
Waking up everybody else, because it needs all of us. It needs, you know, what's going on. When we set up the Defending Humanity, the organization and website, our purpose was to educate people on their human rights, demonstrate to them how the last 2 years have seen every single one of the human rights being violated by the elitists, and then get them so incensed that they start standing up and saying no en masse, which is the only way that we can really handle any totalitarian state. It's been, you know, it's the only proven way. A la Gandhi, a la Mandela. And it is now starting to happen. I mean, look at Sri Lanka. That's a pitchfork moment. We've been there and done that before, but we need to do something different this time. We can't just, you know, that's the worst of the options, is the pitchfork moment. What we need to do is to help people understand and fight back and remove from their positions of power the elitists. And we all need to focus on that, because we can't keep trying to deal with the confusions and the mayhem that they cause and try and fix the problem. The actual problem is these elitists who are antisocial. Mm-hmm. And we need to focus on getting them off. Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. Yes, actually, very good point.
and mass non-compliance, and it's funny you use the word non-compliance, that's actually been trending on Twitter for the last 2 days in conjunction with the COVID jab. So you've got hashtag non-compliant or don't comply.
Good.
And you go on to Twitter and you look at the trending, it says hashtag do not comply. And then underneath that, there's an article linking to how safe COVID vaccines and make sure you get your booster shot. So yeah, non-compliance, I believe, is the answer. It always has been the answer, but it's getting that message through to another term I actually hate to use and grown sick of, to the sheep, to the herd, to the people who are compliant. So we'll pick up on this topic, and I've made some notes of a few things that you've said, Steve. So I might hit you with a curveball after the break, after the news at 12:45. This is TNT Radio.
No vax, no service. A reminder of how the elites want to control you.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
This is CNN anchor Don Lemon explaining how the world should view the unvaccinated.
Don't get the vaccine, you can't go to the supermarket. Don't have the vaccine, you don't show it, can't go to the ball game. Don't have the vaccine, can't go to work. You don't have the vaccine, can't come here. No shirt, no shoes, no service. That's where I think we should be right now.
Yes, no vax, no service. This is our future, only if we allow it. This CNN view was the prevailing view in Northeast liberal cities and West Coast American cities. That is, until there were electoral consequences. Then the science changed, the political science. Suddenly, cities like New York, San Francisco dropped their vaccine mandates when they did focus groups showing that their own Democratic Party base wanted no more of these COVID restrictions. The only way to fight this new normal of the Great Reset is resistance, defiance, and never letting the bastards win. For the Morano Minute, this is Mark Morano on TNT Radio.
Hello. Hiya. So, what are we going to do with your hair today?
Oh, well, just a trim, thanks. You know, maybe an inch or two off, nothing fancy.
Okay, great. Now hold still!
Whatever you're doing, it's important to use the right tools for the job. So if you want to quit smoking, pick up a new and improved Quick Kit free from a local pharmacy. To find your nearest, text FREE and your postcode to 88088 or visit smokefree.nhs.uk. England only, £2 household while stocks last. Standard network charges apply.
For the news and views you can't hear anywhere else.
You guys are talking about everything that I just wanted to ask about.
This is Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And we're back, and I'm talking to Stephen Ferry, all the way from not-so-great USA. And we were talking about the World Economic Forum, the elitist, the parasitics class view on people. And Steve himself has said he's trained butlers and service staff for royalty and for wealthy people, and how the elitists don't actually understand the true nature of humanity because they have separated themselves in their own correctness away from us. And we was also talking about how we can, as freedom fighters, as people who are speaking out and trying to get the truth to the masses, how by non-compliance we can ultimately defeat them. So we're going to try and have some positive conversation to finish off my stint today on Locked and Loaded. How do you think that non-compliance should manifest itself?
Well, I mean, it's just everybody who's given the opportunity to do something stupid just says, sorry, I'm not going to do that. And just standing up and saying that and organizing as many other people to do the same. So it's really quite easy. We use a little booklet called The Way to Happiness, which has some very good PSAs, which are public service announcements, to illustrate. The booklet is a common sense based moral code. And the 10th precept or moral code out of 21 is do not support a government that is not run by and for the people. And if you are being run by a government, which most of us are, that is being run by special interests for their own benefit, you simply withdraw your support. You make it so hard for them to do anything because you just don't comply. And it has to be across the boards, really. I live in Tennessee, which is very much like England, and it's a red state, meaning that it's a Republican. We don't have huge problems. We very quickly got over our lockdowns and all this sort of stuff. Not that many people have been injected and so forth. That's because enough of the people here have their own standards. They have their own understanding of life. They're very Christian, actually, is what it boils down to. Most of them, you speak to any of them, and they'll tell you about their ancestors in England in the 14th century. You know, it goes a long way back. That's the kind of environment that we want to create around us locally, so that there is a lot of support locally. And if you go into a store like Costco, which is one of these huge box stores like Asda, I think, in England. I think Asda. They will say, our company policy is you must wear a mask. And you say, okay, that's fine, thank you. And you keep walking in. In other words, just don't acquiesce. Because as soon as we do, then they have control over us. We offer as a public service, actually, a series of five seminars educating people on what the anti-social or anti-human person is like. And by the way, the numbers that you were quoted, it's over 15%. It depends what you're talking about, because there's a hardcore of 2 to 3% who are really... But not everybody who's anti-social or anti-human is in a position where they are rich and wealthy and controlling the world. So you do get in your own environment, in, you know, around the corner from you, there's going to be some anti-humanist. But if you recognize what they're like, and that's what our training does, it's a complimentary service, you'll realize that there are very specific characteristics this 2 to 3% have, and they're the key ones that we need to nail. What do I mean by nail? Get them off the line or any line of power. An obvious example is, what's his name? The guy who's going around destroying all the countries in the world using his Trump. Money. He destroyed...
Soros. George Soros?
Yes. Yeah. Why is he still walking around? That's my question. We need, and I'm not saying that we should get out our blunderbusses. What I am saying, though, is that we need to get legal, which is what is working now. There's so many people, so many lawyers and groups working to get these people off the line and hit with their crimes. That's what we need to do. So as an individual and as our local group, we just say no. And otherwise, we focus on finding out what are these people like and getting them off the line. And it's important to disconnect them personally for us too. If we're still connected to them in some way, they can still make us wobbly. Mm-hmm. And you know, you'd mentioned something like over 15%, someone had said, are anti-human, antisocial. It's maybe about 20%, but they're just sort of taking on the color of the anti-humanists. They're not actually antisocial hardcore. But they do start behaving that way because they've been pushed in that direction by the antisocial people. And so it's important to recognize these people and get them off our own lines so that we can then be more stable. Because the reason people get sick, the reason they get wobbly, the reason they go up and down, one minute they're happy about life, the next they're all miserable and thinking that everything's going to hell in a bucket. My perspective is it's not going to hell in a bucket because these antisocial people are just weasels. They have no power unless you give it to them. And that means you stay connected to them and allow them to influence you. So I'm very confident. You're talking about wanting an upbeat
message. Yeah, that's a positive finish.
Yeah, exactly. There's no way they can win. And one of the things that I provide in the seminars we run is the 19 reasons that they will fail. There's 19 compelling reasons that these people will fail in their global objectives. And they all relate to the basics of life. It's a bit like, you know, one of the basics of life is what goes around comes around. It's a, you know, it's a pretty obvious lesson we tend to learn. These guys haven't learned it. As you say, they're so arrogant. They think everything they do is right. And nobody is even worth listening to in terms of, well, maybe you're not right. But the thing is, they can't afford to admit they're wrong because they're so close to having a psychotic break, and to at least in their own mind, that they think if they admit any failure, that's the end of them. Whereas most of us, we're willing to admit mistakes.
And that was my, and it's great that we're sort of finishing off in this sort of fashion and tune, Stephen, because from the very beginning of the show, my bit of advice was, being wrong is actually good. It's how we learn. And this is the biggest failing of our political class, of the parasite class, the elitists, is that they can't admit that they're wrong. They've made their decision, and now, you're eating fish with two forks, and that's it. Don't you dare challenge that two-fork fish narrative, because we've said it in stone. We even carved it into some guidestones once upon a time, although they're no longer here. And we must be right. And it's almost like they have no concept that they could be wrong. It's almost like they have no concept that they might have been failed. They might have failed. Their answer to when things aren't flowing in the direction that they want them to flow in, i.e., you know, they wanted to persist with lockdowns. And we've heard Patrick during one of the ad breaks suggesting that this is going to come again in the future. Yeah, it's obvious it doesn't work. Why would they want to do it again? Or, you know, taking aside the fact that there may never have really been a pandemic. Of course there wasn't.
Right.
I've seen no evidence of it. But they're just going to keep pushing on. They're going to, how do we solve the problem we created with this law or rule or instruction? I know, we will double down on it. And then we'll double down on that again. We're never going to turn around and say, actually, we thought that actually lockdowns were a bad idea. Just using them as an example of something that they've done. Do you think that this approach, this doubling down, let's push it harder and harder and harder, is ultimately going to just wake up more and more people, and soon that their power base of compliance is just getting watered down continually? Do you think that's the sort of situation and direction of travel that we're in right now?
Absolutely, because that's one of the definitions of insanity, is continue to do the same thing when it didn't work. We all know that. What's going to happen is more and more normal people are going to wake up, but these people also are protected by a smaller cadre of people who do support them in some way. But if they're really smart, and this is one of the reasons why these people will never succeed, if the guys who support them, like the henchmen, the enforcers, the managers, wake up to the fact that every time an antisocial person takes over complete control, one of the first things they do is get rid of the people who supported them, got them there. Why? Because they're the next biggest threat. Look at what Stalin did with his generals. Look at what Hitler did with the brown shirts. So these people are the ones we need to start breaking down and alerting to the fact that, hey, you may think you're on the right side, but you're not, and you're going to be next in line. I mean, I looked at how sheepish the police were in the palace of the Sri Lankan president when they were overrun by a huge number of people. It's like, I had nothing to do with this. It wasn't me protecting the president. Excuse me while I rip off my uniform so you won't be able to find me. Well, these guys need to wake up and do that before it gets to the last critical moment. And that's one of the reasons why they will fail. Another reason they'll fail is because they are fearful of other people. And once they've got rid of most of us, the 90%, who's going to be left? It's going to be them plus their henchmen. Mm-hmm. They're going to keep looking behind their back, waiting for the other shoe to fall, the sword of Damocles, because they know that they can't trust anyone. None of them trust anybody else. So, you know, it's like, what kind of a life are you leading yourself to? You know, there are so many basic laws of life they're violating just because they're so damn stupid.
And they believe that they are free from the retribution that karma will provide. They try to get acceptance. They try to get compliance. They try to get signatures when they stick that jab in your arm in a hope that karma, that lady, that lovely lady of the night that might come for them, won't. And unfortunately, it's unavoidable. Stephen, it's been an absolutely wonderful conversation. I've really enjoyed talking to you. Thanks for getting up at 6 o'clock in your pajamas. May I also add, you've got a wonderful mustache. And good luck in the future. And I'm sure we will speak again. Thank you for listening to Locked and Loaded on TNT. Cool. This is Darren of Plymouth. I'm signing off. And I will be back tomorrow at 10 o'clock. Have a good day. Thank you.